Get ready for a week-long celebration of music, community, and fabulous fun with Joy Radiothon 2024. Joy has the largest collection of rainbow podcast content in the world, and you can help keep us out loud and proud by donating during Joy Radiothon 2024. Just go to joy.org.au/radiothon. Mark it in your calendars because Joy Radiothon returns June 1st to 7th. And remember, we all flourish with joy.
Welcome to another Joy 94.9 podcast.
In this Joycast, you'll hear a summary of the weekly program. Due to copyright restrictions, the music has been edited out to make this Joycast possible.
For more information about the music played during the show, please visit the blog at joy.org.au/The Fool and the Opera.
You're on The Fool and the Opera on Joy 94.9, which is probably the most environmentally program on the Joy grid. Yes, we've been recycling our music since the 16th century. I'm Dan Vo, I'm the host for the show. Thanks for joining me. If you're only going to listen to one episode of The Fool and the Opera in 2008, please make it this one, as it's going to be the last one for the year it is, that is. Thanks to Bo for another amazing episode of Gaze of Our Lives. And as always, the show will be followed up at 7 with Bent Notes, so please do stick around. It's a packed show today with Hell's Bells, Bittersweet Snow, and old acquaintances. Tonight we catch up with local composer David Chisholm, who will be talking about his operatic song cycle, The Beginning and the End of the Snow. The program also works best with your participation, so please do comment and send in your feedback. I want to make this show as good for you as it is for me, so you can SMS to 0427JOY949 or email onair@joy.org.au, or you can give Lucky Brendan a call on 96992949. You may want to keep that number in mind, as I do have a copy of the DVD The Counterfeiters to give away later in the show as well. Oh, and finally, of course, if you've come to listen to traditional opera and reworkings and remixes, well, this is the place to listen to it. I'm sure you'll be pleasantly surprised with the mix we've got today as well. We've got lots of great music, and to kick it off is Oliver Mann. You're on The Fool and the Opera on Joy 94.9, and I'm Dan Vo, just in case I needed to tell myself that. Now, that was Oliver Mann with Hell's Bells 1, 2, and 3, or Hell's Bells Trilogy, if you prefer that. In case you didn't realise, it has nothing to do with the AC/DC Hell's Bells. Now, Mann is an incredibly talented lad, and apart from his independent music, he's also a singer for the Victorian Opera, a baritone, but his voice does have a startling range though, and you can hear on the album The Possum Wakes at Night, which is a very deliciously folky kind of an album, and from that track you can hear that he also brings in this great melding of opera and folk, which I think is the sort of thing that we like to hear on this program. So it's amazing what you can find in your backyard, literally. Mann is a Brunswick boy, and our next guest on the program is also a local boy. David Chisholm is a composer and a Melbourne resident, although these days he's so in demand around the world that that he's just as likely to be in New York, which he's just come back home from, or Paris, which he'll be off to in a couple of weeks. So he came in for a chat before he headed off to New York, and you're going to hear right now the highlights of that interview with David Chisholm. You're on The Fool and the Opera on Joy 94.9. David Chisholm is a renowned composer in Melbourne town and across the globe. He's written for string quartet, organ, and among other things, an operatic song cycle called The Beginning and the End of the Snow. Thanks for joining me, David.
Thanks, Dan.
Well, tell me about the project, David. How did it all start?
I had this old book of penguin poetry from the 50s, 60s, and I found this guy, Yves Bonfoy, and I discovered this poetry cycle called Début et fin de la neige, The Beginning and the End of the Snow. I thought, well, that's really quite good, actually. So I got in touch with him, and we started this sort of correspondence. As it found out later, he just thought it was very strange that some composer from the other side of the world should even know about his work. So he just went, yeah, sure, you can set this to music. And I thought I'd set a little bit of it, and then I thought, I'll just set the whole thing, you know, why not?
I want you to tell me a bit more about the poetry. What was it about the poetry that actually stood out for you?
His work's really allegorical, and I really like more abstract, allegorical, reflective texts. I like things that touch on matters concerning life, death, existence. It's a beautiful set of poetry in that it uses nature and metaphors in nature, and in this particular case, the element of snow, to really look at the transiency of life, the fleeting nature of life. There's a really beautiful poem that talks about how he wishes he could grant eternity to this snowflake that's landed in his palm, but recognizing that already the heat from his body has dissolved it. I like the idea of writing works that assail to a sense of beauty in the world, keeping in mind the fact that art, like life, is very temporary, and you can't find one single meaning for anything. I think this is why I'm drawn to poetry. You know, I mean, music, you can't really pin down and say it means this. People will listen to something and agree on it and go, ah, that's great. But you can never really get at the essence of what it is. It's part emotion, it's part language, it's part philosophy, it's something other. Music is always something other. The longer and the more that I write, the more interested in ideas that transcend the moment are. So you build something like this, which is a standalone work, and I'm building it as much to be received now. It's important that people can engage with it now. But also, I'd like to think that in 50 years, 100 years, 200 years, people can still engage with it, that it's set apart from fashion, that it's set apart from, you know, today, but nonetheless intrinsically a product of today. Miriam Gordon-Stewart, who's a soprano, this is actually scored for, this was written specifically with Miriam in mind.
Okay.
So it was something I thought, yeah, I really want to write a full cycle for her, a solo work for her, and then set about deciding what instrumentation I would use. And I wanted it to have a sort of, given that the subject matter is about snow and the mutability of snow, I wanted it to have a kind of, yeah, sort of ephemeral, otherworldly transiency quality to it. A really important consideration is temporal displacement, so that you don't really know what period of time it's really been written in, or you create these illusions. So I wanted string in there, and I thought with a soprano in there, I didn't want a violin in there. I thought I'd support the voice better with viola and cello. That gave me great range, and also they're two instruments that blend really beautifully together. So at times they could also mask each other and appear as one instrument. Clarinet featured, doubling bass clarinet. And this is where it started to be really built around particular players. I had met Richard Haynes, who's a really great queer international superstar, you know, all of 24, 25, and he just roams the world playing clarinet. He's an absolute genius on the instrument. And I'd met him, and I thought, yeah, I want to write for you. And he was really open to it, because he's a new music, music whore, really. It's so extraordinary to find someone with such virtuosity whose passion and interest is in new music, not in repertoire. So he was a part of it. I've been writing a lot for harp in the last few years, and I thought harp would be really, really perfect. It has a kind of crystalline, timeless quality to it, something ethereal and ephemeral. The fifth instrument I thought should be a keyboard instrument, and in fact, it ended up being three keyboard instruments. So it was one player that switched between piano, harpsichord, which gave this real sense of when, and celeste, which is a keyboard idiophone. You play it and it sounds like little bells. It's beautiful, very, very pretty. And again, it has a very associated snow-like quality to it. And I just really love it. Tinkly bell writing. And it really gave me, over the period of 70 minutes, a capacity to be able to really expand this colour world, because I had these three different keyboards and I had a clarinet doubling bass, so you had a great range there. Harp is a really flexible, beautiful instrument, even though it's very distinct, and the two strings, as I said, meld in and out. And of course, you've got this soprano. So it proved like a beautiful little chamber setting, a really intimate work, not unlike the poetry, which is quite diaristic. It had an intimacy to it, and I thought, this is really, really special to keep it contained with just those instruments. To be able to use five instrumentalists in such a way as I did was to be able to expand the capacities of what five instruments can do. And I milked every colour I could out of them. And it's okay. Great. That kind of economy I have a near respect for.
Le Pou Jou from the song cycle The Beginning and the End of the Snow, with music set around the poetry of Yves Bonfils. That particular poem is one that David Chisholm referred to when he talked with us, and you just heard that just then. And I was taken by it, and I grabbed a copy of it, and I thought I'd read it to you because it's quite a beautiful poem. Here it is now. To this flake dropping on my finger, I wish to grant eternity by making my life my warmth. My past of all these days, simply an instant, this one now, boundless, but always it is no more. No more than a drop of water lost in the midst of a body moving through the snow. It's quite a beautiful poem, and it has this sort of tension of a notion of eternity. And whenever I hear of the word eternity, I sort of think of the time when it was emblazoned across in cursive letters across the Sydney Harbour Bridge as part of the turn of the century and the coming of the Millennium New Year's Eve celebrations. And in terms of ephemeral and fleeting beauty, that word was one that was used by Arthur Stacey, a down-and-out man who graffitied the word across Sydney, I suppose as a bit of a hopeful message. And he wrote the word more than a million times in the 50s and 60s all over Sydney. And in fact, there's an opera by Jonathan Mills about Stacey, and you can catch it on ABC TV in the new year. The details will be on the blog tonight, joy.org/the fool in the opera. So I'll post it up tonight, and I'll remind you a bit closer to the date as well. Now, coming up, we have a copy of The Counterfeiters to give away, and keep your texts and messages coming through. So it's 0427JOY949. Let me know if you're enjoying the show or hating it, whatever. Email onair@joy.org.au, or you can give us a call on 9699 2949. Meanwhile, we are going to continue our interview highlights with composer David Chisholm.
So let's talk about the writing process. Mm-hmm. Set the picture for me.
I work on computer. I use an application called Sibelius. I can import QuickTime movies in there. It's been a very useful tool for doing ballet where the choreography already exists. I'd say 60% of my working time is administrative. So I do a lot of grant applications. I do a lot of...
the things that get you paid.
things to set up relationships with people for future presentation. The conditions of work could always improve financially. However, having said that, it presents you with extraordinarily meaningful opportunities, ways to spend one's time. Composition really is about time, ultimately, arranging time and sound in time. I think one of the greatest struggles is being able to do it, sitting there with a blank page going, I've developed processes for myself. And often I'm ticking over things as well in my brain, and I'll just sit down and do it.
So the idea is that a particular theme or a sound you sort of expand.
Yeah, often it's often the smallest of ideas, like the smallest of gestures in music, the smallest phrase or half a phrase or a couple of notes even sometimes. And you invest and you investigate. You start looking at it from different angles and you start expanding it in different directions and you start looking at then what those results are, and you step back a bit and go, and maybe the original idea you had for it doesn't actually end up in the work. Because music is so much about getting things in the right order and getting the right sequence of gestures and colours and dynamics all to balance so that the journey through it makes sense to the listener and that you are taken on a very specific sort of journey.
I can't remember which composer said it. It went along the lines of, a work is never finished, it's just simply abandoned.
I don't know if I agree. I get the sentiment completely. I think it's because by the time you've gotten through writing it, editing it, doing the parts, doing all that thing, rehearsing it, I mean, you just don't want to know about it, you know? It's like, I'm done here. I remember in a book that Wagner did called On Conducting, there was a point that he made that's always stuck with me. The only time that a composer has to ensure that the presentation of their work is as they want is while they're living. So he was very much about saying you can't, you know, the myth that surrounds composition is, oh, they'll appreciate you when you're dead. Right. And I mean, and this goes back centuries of people not quite getting the abstract nature of music. And while that's really lovely to think that people will finally, you know, get you, I don't want that. I want them to get it now. And I'm fortunately, I have the kinds of people that get what I do now are fellow musicians. And I feel in that sense, the work isn't abandoned because it's held in the hands of these really amazing musicians and they carry the legacy forward. But I'm very keen always to get as much exposure for my work as possible because that's absolutely critical if it's going to have a life as a body of work beyond my actual living, breathing life. So pessimistic. I don't know. I mean, we live and we die. And I think it's the fundamental reality of my artistic practice. Everything is enshrined in memorial in some way. Everything is memory. Everything is about things that are ephemeral that you can't pin down. And that the only real pleasure is in the moment. And music is a great allegorical art in that way. That you can only experience music through listening, through being in that moment.
So tell me about the philosophy of composing. What is it?
What it is for me is this thing about memorial. And look, I think I'm obsessed with memorial because I'm sort of a little death obsessed, not in a narcissistic way. Although I don't know anyone who isn't sort of confronted by their own mortality on some level, the whole death drive to live and get squeeze as much in as possible. I know I tend to live a very active life with that consciousness. But also I had a lot of people die on me from my early 20s through to my early 30s, like significant people, my mother, a mentor, my grandparents. And so I became really fluent at it. And it becomes very familiar. And so, and I think also coming of age as a gay man, at 13 is hardly a man, but coming into my sexuality at the same time that the AIDS crisis hit the world, you know, in the early 80s, very much informed my own identity. There was a generation of gay men above me, or several, I think, who were essentially just wiped out. And I think culturally, I think queer culture is still in some ways trying to pick up the threads of what that actually meant. A lot of identity was lost. A lot of people died. I think grief has been embedded in my work. I'm bereft, trying to pick up the threads of a culture like so many other artists of my generation, trying to figure out what do you say? It's like, what do you say post-Auschwitz? What do you say post-AIDS? What is it that you can possibly create of poetry and beauty in the world? There's that great Primo Levi quote about, you know, there can be no poetry after Auschwitz. But I want there to be poetry. I want there to be a realm in the world where it's still possible to contemplate how fascinating it is, how amazing it is to live it all is so extraordinary. And to not try and condense meaning into one small, small pocket and say it's yes or no, it's on or off, but to take language and meaning and life and expand it in as many different directions as possible. I really like the idea that it's possible to create beautiful things in the world.
Well, thanks very much for the beautiful piece of work that is The Beginning and the End of the Snow. And I wish you all the best with your future works.
Thank you. Thanks, Dan.
You're on The Fool and the Opera on Joy 94.9. Thanks so much to David Chisholm for talking with us about The Beginning and the End of the Snow. It's a beautiful, bittersweet work which simultaneously explores the coming of death and the celebration of life. And when he refers to the poetry of Auschwitz, you know, how can you find beauty after a horrific tragedy, you know, and how can you find it in the midst of it? Well, we talked a little bit about that last week, that the human spirit endures and seeks out, even in the direst of situations, you know, it seeks out laughter and love and song. Well, a very powerful movie that follows this theme as well is The Counterfeiters. It's a story about a Jewish counterfeiter who survives the Nazi concentration camps in Nazi Germany. It follows, you know, there's a wonderful scene in it, actually, where for entertainment, the Jewish prisoners put on a show. And of course, there is opera. From Tosca, the great aria Elusivan le Stelle, it makes an appearance. It's a fitting aria as the character in the opera is an honourable prisoner reflecting on life and his love Tosca the day before his execution. It's his final goodbye. Well, I've got a copy of the DVD available for you to win if you're a Joy member. So thanks to our friends at Madmen Entertainment. So why don't you give Brendan a call on 96992949, and the DVD is yours if you're a Joy member, of course. So that's 96992949. To give you an idea of the emotional power of that particular aria, Elusivan le Stelle, I will play you a version that's recorded by Franco Corelli, just for the hell of it, you know. The clarinet played in is actually absolutely haunting, and you've got to listen very carefully to the way he rolls his R's as well. You're on Joy 94.9, The Fool and the Opera. You're on The Fool and the Opera on Joy 94.9. This is Dan Vo here with you. Thanks for joining me. Elusivan le Stelle with Franco Corelli. Did you hear the way he rolled his R's? There's more R's than a pirate. Oh, I crack myself up. But thank you very much to Zach from Footscray who called in and won that DVD, The Counterfeiters. That's an excellent DVD there. I hope you enjoy watching that. And also thank you to Simona who has texted in saying to David that, she remembers meeting you and it was no doubt a great experience. So thank you very much for listening in, Simona. And texting as well. You can also text 0427-JOY-949. That's the text SMS number there. Now, Franco Corelli, that's Puccini at his very best there. And, well, you know, that's how I feel about it today anyway. If I was condemned to listen to only one composer for all eternity, it would probably be Puccini. Or David Chisholm, of course, our guest from today. But there is a way that Puccini can convey pain so easily in a musical turn of phrase that is just absolutely sublime. And without even knowing what the lyrics are, you know that the singer is sort of saying goodbye to the world there. Now, talking of goodbyes and of not knowing the lyrics, it's that time of year again where across the globe, people in countries all over break out in an ancient dialect from the Scottish Lowlands. I speak, of course, of the song Auld Lang Syne. And which, you know, no New Year's Eve celebration is complete without. And of course, no one singing that song actually knows what it means, do they? Now, the song is used to say goodbye to the old year and say hello to the new year, in most countries anyway. Interestingly enough, in Taiwan, it's actually used as a funeral song and as a graduation song. In Thailand, it's also used to mark the end of sport matches. And in the Philippines, it's used for both New Year's and Christmas. So there you go. But contextually, they're all saying goodbye to something old and hello to something new. So it makes sense. As for the origin of the music, well, it depends on who you talk to, where people will tell you where it's from. Because according to a Brit, you know, the music is from the overture of the opera Rosina by William Shields. Talk to a Scot and they'll insist it was fielded together by poet Robert Burns, who wrote the poem Auld Lang Syne. Both, of course, will ignore the fact that it was probably lifted from a violin solo called Apollo's Banquet, which existed 100 years before both did. And, of course, there's also the fight over what is the right way to play it. There's the traditional Scottish way, and then there's the popular Scottish way. I don't really want to get involved in all that sort of stuff, so I'm going to play both for you now as well. The first is by Mary Campbell and David Francis, and it featured on the Sex and the City album, which being the new recording, you'd expect it to be the popular version, but actually it's the true put blue paint on your Scottish face and don a kilt to sing it, sort of the proper way to do it. And the second is an operatic rendition by Kenneth McKellar, and although it is the popular way to sing it, apparently this particular version is also the cheesy way to do it, according to Alex from Three Chords and the Truth when I told him today that I was going to play it. But that's what you're going to get. And for bonus points, if you can SMS in on 0427JOY949, what is the country that once upon a time used the tune from Auld Lang Syne as their national anthem? There you go. Coming up, Auld Lang Syne.
Sure. never brought to mind. Should all the acquaintance be forgot for old lang syne?
The Fool and the Opera on Joy 94.9.
For auld lang syne, we'll tak a couple kindness yet for auld lang syne.
You're on The Fool and the Opera on Joy 94.9, and that, of course, was Auld Lang Syne. I'm sure you'll be sick of that by the time that New Year's actually gets here. Now, the version we had at the very start was by Mary Campbell and David Francis, and followed by Auld Lang Syne, the tacky version by Kenneth McKellar. And I've got that on good authority. Two Scots have confirmed that for me, so I'm not being, you know, silly or anything like that. It's the truth. You're on The Fool and the Opera on Joy 94.9. I am Dan Vo, and well, it's coming up to that time where I've got a bit of due to you. Almost that time. We won't just do it just yet, because before I do, as always, I usually end with a jazzy number. And because we played a piece from Tosca before with Elusivan Elestele, I thought, well, why not unearth a version that has that combined with a very nice caravan jazz piece. I'm sure you'll recognize it once you hear it. So we're just going to give that a bit of a whirl at the moment. You're on Joy 94.9, The Fool and the Opera. You're on The Fool and the Opera on Joy 94.9, and that was, of course, Elusivan Elestele mixed with Roses Avalon. A nice little number where you mix jazz and opera together, and you get a great little baby that is very beautiful. Now, we've got a little bit of time left, so I'm going to tell you about some of the fantastic things that you can look forward to next year when we hit 2009, and it's going to be a mighty fine year. I think 2009 is going to be fine has been the motto that we've been flying around here at the station, and there's a few things that are definitely worth checking out in Melbourne as well, because we've actually got a blessing of amazing talents in Melbourne. Of course, we played a bit of Olive Mann before, and we spoke with David Chisholm, who's a Melbourne boy at the moment as well. And next year, we will have things like Carmina Burana come along, and there's also going to be Don Giovanni, done by Victorian Opera. Don Giovanni is one of those amazing operas that, when I first saw it, by the end of it, I'd fallen in love. And that was the moment for me in opera, when I saw that happen. And it was just, there's this moment where, you know, the statue comes to dinner. It's a very, you know, old-fashioned kind of story. But the statue comes to dinner, and the scenery just crashes down. And he implores Don Giovanni to repent or be stricken to hell. And in that moment is when I fell in love with opera. And the fact that Teddy Tahu Rhodes, who was acting at the time, who was absolutely hunky, had his shirt off, had nothing to do with it, I swear. Speaking of operatic people who I like, Greg has texted in saying, great interview with David. Thank you very much for that, Greg. And he says, I'm not surprised that you're into opera singers who roll their arses. That's kind of clever there. And of course, coming up next year as well in Victorian Opera, there will be an Australian opera, Rembrandt's Wife. And in Opera Australia as well, there's going to be a great little lineup coming up in autumn. So the Magic Flute is definitely something worth checking out before, because they're going to be bringing some outside of opera people to... They're going to be putting some physical theatre into the opera itself. So it's going to be something that's definitely worth checking out. Anyway, that's all coming up next year. And of course, to start off our first program next year as well, I'll be having Moffat Oxenbould as well. So that's going to be a big one. So definitely worth listening in next week for that. So as Puccini would say, next year, tune into the show. Same Fledermaus time, same Fledermaus channel. Thanks very much for joining me. It's such a blessing to be able to bring this sort of show to you. So thank you so much for your support.
Thanks for listening to the Joycast of The Fool and the Opera from Joy 94.9 Community Radio. You can find more Joycasts and the program blog at joy.org.au/The Fool and the Opera. The Fool and the Opera is produced by Dan Vo and Jed Gilbert, thanks to the support of Joy sponsors and members. Please help support it by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
This podcast was produced by Joy Media. You can support Joy's diverse sound and diverse community this June by donating to Joy Radiothon 2024. Go to joy.org.au/radiothon. And remember, we all flourish with joy.